Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance properties with a distinctively Australian flavour. Monday evening. And so, of course, Edwin is back for another of his rants. Hi, Edwin. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Martin. Riddle me this, Pat Martin. You know, how do you crush first-time homebuyers and keep them down?
Yeah, we can't have any too many homebuyers around the place. You know, they mess everything up, don't they?
Look, they do. They do. I mean, and it's, you know, the way to keep them down is you incentivize and con them into, you know, with all the government grants and so forth to jump in with low deposits, very high LVRs. You know, get the RBA. Well, they, people say that the governments don't get the RBA to do anything, but you and I know different. You know, to say that they won't raise rates till 2024, and then booyah, drop the guillotine on them.
Exactly. Well, expect another 50 basis points tomorrow. I don't know what you think, but I think that's going to be 50 basis points tomorrow, which will continue the journey up. And even CBA is saying, look, probably up to 2.6 eventually. ANZ is saying 3.25. The market's saying 3.9. I mean, these are huge increases. And Nassim Kadim did a thing today on mortgage prisoners, right, which you and I have been talking about previously, actually, about what happens when you can't refinance to a lower rate because – you know, your income doesn't support it anymore. And what about negative equity? I mean, we have really set up a really big problem now for not just a few months, but perhaps for several years.
Look, we haven't. It's going to take a long time. I was just talking to Dusty over the weekend, and I was telling Dusty that, you know, from even if things were, I mean, look, the government's saying that they're going to change things, they're going to do this, even if a million homes were on the agenda and that was paid income. Yeah, before they actually get get past the local councils and so forth and all the red tape, we won't see the beginnings or the finishings of the beginnings till about 3 years' time. Yeah. Things don't happen overnight, and this is what a lot of people have got to understand. No different to mortgage stress between mortgage stress and delinquency that which you and I have been talking about. All these grandiose ideas that the governments have, but you know the previous government smashed the first home buyers, conned them into getting into the market at the peak with all sorts of promises, and now you know it's part two, Pat Martin. How do you not only chop 50% of the first home buyers next off, but how do you chop the rest? I mean, you know, you bring in migrants.
Absolutely. Well, of course, they announced, you know, 195,000, I think, was the official number. We speculated a few months ago about what levers they would actually come up with, right? And funnily enough, migration was on the list, wasn't it?
Well, there was, and among other things. And, you know, we spoke, somewhat coy on some of the other levers, but they're out there, they're in the horizon. We haven't done well with them. The Greens are calling for a moratorium or a freeze on interest rate rises. We've had other calls from the Greens to an extent. I sort of go along with them. That's a freeze on rents. It has its merits. We've had all sorts of calls from all sorts of pundits and politicians. But I wonder why. I really wonder why, Martin. I just kind of think that the majority of them have got investment properties. I don't know, even this fellow that was calling the government for a freeze on interest rates. The little birdie tells me that he's got four properties, two investment properties that their mortgages over, and a holiday home in a principal place of residence. Good luck to him.
Well, The Guardian, of course, made that report the other day, which showed that a lot of our politicians have multiple properties, including multiple investment properties. And funnily enough, that might cloud their view as to what should be done. I mean, I'm just saying, it might.
You think? Yeah, I mean, look, it's just getting going from bad to nuts and to crazier. But you know what? Yeah, what I say is just keep the film rolling. it's getting more and more interesting by the week and by the month. I mean, we're going to talk about some sad stories from our WeChat chatterers, as well as some very interesting stories as well. It is just getting nuttier by the month. But we're going to introduce another topic to our show, and that is the Tom Panos Property Index.
Yeah, I saw that. That'll be quite interesting, right? Because that's an index that moves around a bit, isn't it?
Look, it does. It's got a lot of emotion. But hey, who doesn't love an auction? We're also going to teach our audience to see how they can be the winners out of the whole auction process. We'll talk a little. We'll expand that a little bit later on and see how you can save thousands by holding auctioneers to their own standards or their own ploys as to the whole auction process. Reverse the tables, Martin. Reverse the tables.
Yeah, it's important to understand the game and understand what the rules are, and then disrupt the rules and play it for your own advantage. That's the way to do it, isn't it?
Well, look, it is. It is.
Well, let's start though with the WeChat chats, because there's some very important stuff going on over in China at the moment.
Look, the serious things that are going on is that basically we've had we've got closures, and the WeChat chatterers over the weekend or just before the weekend started talking about new lockdowns that were being implemented over in China. Some are saying, Martin, that these lockdowns won't be, although they're talking about days and potentially only weeks. Some are saying that these lockdowns could run till the CCP have the big meeting in November, and really they want to control the population, because all sorts of things are happening there from an economic point of view, from a geopolitical point of view, from they're getting hammered from all sides. And obviously, the world's found out, the world leaders have found out that lockdowns and keeping the people locked up and locked in the homes is the best way to control them. Second to digital currency, which we're about to get as well. But look, the interesting thing and how this affects us moving forward is if with these rolling lockdowns that they've got in Guangzhou. Guangzhou is the biggest industrial hub that produce products that Australia gets imports, and a lot of it goes to the construction sector. So if these cities are locked down like Chengdu, we're going to be in a lot of strife. Chengdu's in a lot of strife. Not only are they going through a major lockdown and people are going crazy trying to amass as much food as they can, but they've also been hit with the heat waves and so on. And so there's a lot of issues that they're facing there. So with all these issues, from lockdowns to heat waves and to floods and everything else that China's facing, well, it's going to affect us, Martin, because it's only going to be a matter of time, days, maybe a week or two, before they start shutting down the ports again as well. But not only that, but as I said, Guangzhou is the major industrial hub of China, and a lot of the products that we get here in Australia come from there, whether it be finished products or raw materials. So, we can only expect a lot more pain in with materials to do with the construction industry and moving forward.
Yeah, and just something else from China, of course, we got the date of their big political thing, third week in October, right? Now date confirmed. So that'll be an important milestone too. So that might well modify some of the things that they may or may not do, bearing that date is there in the horizon. But meantime, I was reading a few analysts and they're all saying, well, these lockdowns, you could go on into next year quite easily now. There's no sense of changing trajectory on that. And as you say, more and more economic centres now are getting hit. So that's bad news for us down here in Australia from all sorts of ways. And as you say, building and construction materials, that's where they come from. So that's going to put even more pressure on local construction.
Yeah, look, it will. And although we're now going to be getting migrants from other parts of the world, I've been looking at it and talking to a number of builders and people that are already bringing in overseas the labour force in order to assist them in the construction with the buildings and developments and so forth. And it's interesting how they're talking about the people that are coming. They're not as as efficient as the Chinese people were. Because don't forget, it took us about 10 or 12 years to really train them and educate them in how we like to do things, and they were just getting the gist of it. Now we've basically got to train a new breed of migrants, or a new demographic of migrants that are predominantly interested in IT, predominantly interested in the medical area, predominantly interested in education. They don't really gravitate towards the construction and that type of labour force, and more but perhaps in the hospitality and retail. So we've now got these proposed migrants that are going to be coming. How long is it going to take before we train them? And again, it goes back to what we started talking about, how long it takes for things to turn around. So, perhaps we're going to have a shortage in the construction labour force for another 3, 4, 5 years.
Well, also given the visa backlog, I was astonished just to hear how many visas are still being processed. I mean, it's, lots and lots and lots and lots. And they're talking 21 months in some cases for visas to be processed. So nothing's going to happen quickly.
No, they're not going to happen. There's over a million that are in the pipeline. Let's not forget that you and I've been talking about for over 12 months the backlog of the approved PR visas that have been given, and it's just a matter of time before they come over. So I mean, there's a spillover from all sides, and there's going to be issues coming from all sides. And this is why we started talking about it, about the mass migration, and for us it was a certainty, because not only what politicians were saying on the face, but the changes to the migration policies in back in months and months and months ago, which was an indicator from our immigration legals, were telling us and were informing us of those changes, which were very strong indicators. And regardless of who came into power, we said that lever was definitely going to be pulled, because the policies had been changed. With the immigration policies had been changed already, and they were in preparation for this mass migration. And we also talked about, we were talking about the 360,000 PR visa holders that were already granted over the 2 years that we really didn't have any immigration into Australia. And now pretty much the lever's been pulled, and it's just a matter of how wide the doors can be opened and how quickly.
Absolutely. Well, we'll wait and see, and it'll all shake down eventually. But the other interesting is there's a cultural reference now coming up to what's going on in China, right? How to keep the masses quiet.
Look, they've been having issues. We know that the Chinese population is shrinking, and shrinking very, very rapidly, and the political parties there and the leaders are very concerned. We've got the young generation, Tang Ping, and then we're not going to buy anything. We are the last generation movements that are scaring the living daylights out of the CCP. But you know what? They've looked to the West for inspiration, Martin. It looks like they're looking to the West, and Hollywood has certainly influenced the West a lot. So they're taking a page from the books of Hollywood, and they are launching into romantic comedies in order to encourage the young people to fall in love and to form this family nucleus and have kids and live happily ever after, and forget about the fact that they can't afford a home, they can't afford a vehicle, and they've got no jobs. But hey, love conquers all, Martin. Love conquers all. If you're in love, you can live in a tent. So they're rolling out a mass amount of, and they're really funding a lot of these romantic comedies. And so, look, the big screens basically changed the Western world. And you saw the Mein Kampf part two of the world's leader over in America on I think it was Thursday or Friday our time, how that influences the world, and so look, it's the big screen, Martin. It's the big screen. So the politicians believe that this is the answer to the woes of shrinking population, and the young people are going to fall in love again and have a family and live happily ever after.
Well, that's what Hollywood was all about for a long, long time, right? That's the, Nirvana that's over there. So who knows? I suspect real life gets in the way sometimes.
Look, it does. And unfortunately, there's also... There's good and bad on both sides of the fence. Obviously, there's been a purge of the what you would call the effeminate or the gay media influencers and announcers, and you know it's been harsh, and the world hasn't taken China to account on that. But hey, that's their story. That's their side of the fence, and this is how they think they're going to reboot. That population growth in China. Good luck, is all we can say. But because there's a lot more than a romantic family to keep a romantic comedy to keep a family nucleus together, as many families here in Australia are facing and are finding out.
Yeah, good point. And let's talk about the local WeChat chats, because they're sort of sitting on the sidelines, waiting for the RBA to move, waiting for properties to fall in value, and. Then they'll pounce, presumably, will they?
Yeah, look, that's what they're saying, that they're basically waiting for them to pounce. Unfortunately, they're going to be pouncing on the on a lot of the people that bought into the 2020-2021 market with no upside. They paid premium. They've got no upside. They jumped into the renovators' delights. Without any connections with the construction industry or tradies, and also in the fully renovated homes that paid premium, and these are the first time buyers, of course, that I'm talking about, that are now bleeding, hemorrhaging, and are wounded, and they're going to pounce on them. That's the chat. Most of them are calling for a 50 basis point rise tomorrow. But I'm sort of sticking with Dusty and our new whisperer from Westpac telling us that it could only be 25. But then we'll wait and see. Let's wait and see.
Okay, well, let's indeed wait and see. When talking about big numbers, as we touched on earlier on, migration now, 195,000, so that's up by, 35,000 permanent migrants from previously. Just add a little bit more spice to the property market, huh?
Well, that's right. I saw your video on the rental stress and everything that that's going on that we've been talking about for a while. And this, I guess, this is for us with our rent. This is this article is really part four of our heading the forgotten people. Yeah, what about the local renters? Because it's certainly the government of all persuasions, the governments and of from state, federal, pretty much have forgotten about, and also you would say the locals as well have forgotten about the renters and the little friends. And this is certainly going to put a major squeeze, and hence the reason why the WeChat chatterers have been waiting. And this is what we said even before. This is why the sacrificial lamb, as far as we're concerned, our team and our broader community that we converse with on a weekly basis, we've been saying that the sacrificial lambs have been the first time home buyers that are wanting to get into the market in the price band between your 750 to a million. It's going to look. I'm a believer that it's going to bounce because the investors are going to come back in because of the high rental yields that you can get on in that bracket. Once you start talking above the one million, your 1.2s, 1.3s, 1.3s, the rental return isn't as attractive, unless you get into those bigger homes with bigger lounge rooms and extra family rooms, where the WeChat chatterers are basically converting those homes into makeshift hostels or boarding houses, and they're getting $250 to $300 per week rent per room because they've introduced bathrooms to just about every room in the house. But that's the insane position and place that we are in, and that the renters, the small family units, are finding it more and more difficult. And the increase in migration, and then the current government's smirk on the fact that they're doing this for the future. I mean, somebody said we've all got to go through this. We've got to go through some pain in order to get to the other side. But the unfortunate thing is what we can see is that we're facing the pain. The renters are facing the pain, but our so-called leaders are pain-free.
Absolutely. And I did a show today on rents and the issue about rent rises, because there's lots of different ways of looking at it. The Conversation did quite a nice little article in terms of saying, well, you've got to understand the difference between newly advertised rents and the stock of rents. We've discussed that previously before and why there's such a big divergence. But I also made the point, it's not actually the only story in town. The real story are those renters who are still paying their rents but are struggling to do so, because they are the ones that are going to get more and more into difficulty ahead, simply because the inflation's so running hot. We are going to see some rental rises as well. Just bringing another 35,000 people in, well, most of them will probably start by renting, so it's going to put more pressure on rents in some of the major urban centres, and there isn't necessarily the supply there. So this is going to be a really, really horrendous period for those in the rental sector. And, of course, we've got more people renting than ever before, simply because of the failure of housing affordability more broadly.
Well, that's right. And this is where, and again, this is where the government's present and past have just got it so wrong, because a lot of this should have been foreseen from before. I mean, look, there are a number of things that are at play at the moment. You've got 1.2 million vacant homes or properties around Australia. The majority of them will be apartments, of course. We've got the new population that are coming in, or the new migrants that are coming in, are going to be more centred towards, looking more towards the freestanding homes, because that's what they're going to be aspiring to own and earn. And it's basically small families that are going to be coming in with work visas. So you've got this pressure on freestanding homes, all the smaller to medium density developments, which local councils have created so much red tape, but yet all these monstrosities of lackluster high-rise developments that have sprung up everywhere, that are uninhabitable, and people really don't want to move into those shoeboxes or live there, or if they do, it's a short-term short-term affair. So you've got all these issues that are just culminating over the years, and now they're telling us that they're going to fix it. And on top of that, they've taken $537 billion from the super funds to go towards affordable housing and the like, in order to so-called alleviate the issue with the rental stress. But again, we go back to the timing, Martin. By the time that they get the DAs, they get the approvals, they get the development approvals, and they start building until they finish, it's 3-4 years down the track. And that's if we don't have ongoing and rolling issues with supply chain issues from China, because most of the materials come from China.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a wicked problem which will take a long, long time to solve. Now people are very myopic in terms of thinking about it, aren't they? What about the numbers, though? Interesting things happening with the numbers, I think.
Well, look, they are. It was very, very interesting. It looks like last week in monitoring the numbers from our chat on Monday to the weekend, I sort of got the feeling that spring hasn't sprung as yet, or hasn't been very springy. So, look, the numbers have been very, very weak. And this time around, we've actually got less startup on numbers than last week. It's actually funny, because we didn't have a retraction in for sale listing numbers in Sydney over winter. And yet, in the first listing week of spring, we've got somewhat a bit of a retraction. It's it's small, but it's nevertheless, you need to pay attention, because last week's numbers from Monday's rent till Friday, we didn't get much of a rise in numbers. It was probably about 50% new listings on market than all weeks throughout winter. So, there is logic to this, and it's because at the moment we're not getting a lot of people are taking listings off market because they're not meeting the prices that the agents told them that they were going to get, and the new listings on market aren't matching or superseding the ones that have been taken out. So we're not seeing those for sale listing numbers growth as yet. So we're still going to keep a very close eye on it over the next week or two, just to see how these trends and how many more people are going to be being persuaded to take the properties off market. And again, this goes back to the people that you and I talk about, the people that are more or less testing the market or just seeing what prices they're going to get or if it's a good idea. Because if they're not getting the price, so these are the people that don't really have to sell. The ones that are going to stay on market are people that have to sell, must sell. They've got no option but to sell.
No, that's right. But there are a lot of people, as you say, who kick the tires and have an expectation of a certain price level. And if they aren't able to achieve it, they're not going to do anything. And there's quite a few of those around. I see them in my surveys at the moment. And there's a bigger and bigger gap, actually, Edwin, between what the market is actually saying the value is and what their expectation is. So it's a real interesting conundrum now. So many people are just way off where the current market value of their property actually is.
Well, that's right. And this is again, going back to the whole thing about time. It takes time for the conversations between the agent and the vendors to, you know, to filter through and make the vendors aware of where the real prices are. Look, it also takes time for the agents to start changing their behavior in, you know, buying listings. In other words, going in at a very high, giving the vendors a very high expectation in thinking that they're going to, as the lingo goes, basically crunch them down into accepting a lower value. And it's hard. So unless there's a lot more being played out in the mainstream media, be it on over the radio, over the TV, or any other mainstream, articles that may read online from the mainstream media with regards to property drops and the slowing down and the effect that the rate rises are having on property. Until that is well and truly digested, you're not going to see those changes. But so the gaps between the expectation and the what's offered on the day of the auction, it's going to be very vast. But we see now those gaps are being shortened, and people are starting to come to terms with the lower price market, the expectations that people want. In other words, they're meeting the market. But at the same time, what we're also noticing is that there's a lot of the vendors must be going through a lot at the moment. They're going through a lot because there's not a lot of confidence in terms of taking the properties to auction and having a genuine sale. A lot of people are asking for to go to market by way of private treaty, because they're just scared of auctions and the auctions results that have been that have been coming out of late. So I don't blame them, and hence the reason why we've got very low auction numbers on market, given the fact that again, typically, when spring starts is when people like to be the first cab off the rank and get the property sold by way of auction. But this time we're going more to a private treaty type of scenario.
Yeah, I'm seeing that in my surveys too. More and more people are just not convinced that auctions make any sense at all. And you shared also a recent conversation, which I really just sums it up quite nicely, right? So this is basically saying vendors are being put off by the reality check, reduction in listings. The question is, will there be enough new sellers coming in or not? And what about the first home buyers? I mean, all the things we've been talking about, really.
Yeah, look, it's conversations that I have with our clients, and just trying to also keep them abreast and also keep them realistic. Look, again, this is just a conversation with a client, so and this is, but in general, it gives you an insight, a bit of an insight as to what's happening in his market, in his area, as I talk about there in the conversation with regards to the demographics, the trends, because that is what makes up the vast markets that we have in Sydney that you and I talk about, and the many reasons that people have got to take into account before they go and buy, before they sell, or before they rent. More importantly, having a better and a stronger understanding of the area that people want to live in, like your very what do you call it, granular look at a region, at an area, to people can have all that data before they go out and make a decision. Because regardless of the fact that the properties in some areas have dropped 10%, 15%, in some areas we're already seeing drops back to 2018 prices, it's still a lot of money. And it's still a lot of money when you're also talking about the higher interest rates that you've got to pay on the loans. And the standard of living, the cost of living has also become a lot higher as well, and costlier.
Absolutely. Well, it's a continuing process and it's not over yet. So, higher rates and the CPI continuing to be in the wrong place, power prices continue to rise, all of those things are in play. And in fact, Tarek, of course, put out quite a nice little summary, which also covered both the auctions, Sydney 36.8, Melbourne 49.5, Sydney remains weak, he said. But also, interestingly, that the house price drifts are now accelerating. And, of course, CoreLogic's information was quite significant, showing falls well everywhere pretty much now.
Yeah, look, and the reason why we share this is because it shows, again, the sentiment, the real sentiment that's out there. And, look, I guess for our followers and our viewers, if you play it right, and if you're a student and you've done all your due diligence and you're looking at buying, look, that there are, using the data, using the information, and having a broader understanding of the market and what's at play, I believe that our followers are making better decisions and more educated, much better educated decisions when they make them. Look, people have to buy, people have to sell, people have to rent, people have to live. So we're just trying to empower our audience with a broader perspective, a broader range of tools and arsenal of weapons that they can use against the opponent, which are the selling agents.
Yeah, they are. That's a very good way to put it. The opponent, the selling agent. So I've had quite a few one-on-one conversations over the last couple of weeks with people trying to get ahead of the curve and trying to really understand what's going on. Right, and if you start looking at the data in granular detail, down in the postcode, and you see the particular property trends, you can still make good calls even in a falling market as opposed to a rising market, right? And if you're buying for an occupation, it can still make sense. But you've got to do your homework, you've got to do things right. We keep saying this, Edwin, but it's so critical, even more critical now. Do your homework, get all the data, get yourself educated, and then go into bat and regard the agent as your opponent rather than as your aid.
Well, that's right. Look, again, we also go back to the ancillary services that are required in order for you to buy a property. Is if you're going to be buying something that's going to be requiring extensive renovation or minor works. So unless you've got those contacts, today I was talking to one of our followers, who's also one of our my clients, and he's got two brothers in the building industry, and they've one of them specializes in bathroom renovations, and this is just a basic bathroom renovation that he was doing, say, 6 months ago. He was charging from between 15 and 17, not including PC items and tiles. In other words, not including the fixtures and fittings and the tiles, but he was charging 15 to 17,000 in the inner west area, towards Marrickville, Dowlish Hill, and now, that he's up to 22,000. because that's how much the labor cost has increased, and the cost of materials and everything that you have to do has increased. So you just got to be careful. Mm. As you say, Mark, you just got to be careful and just got to do all your research and look at things very, very granular and through a microscope before you make that decision.
Absolutely. That's what we are trying to underscore, isn't it? Be careful, do your due diligence, don't overcommit too quickly, and make sure you've got all your ducks aligned. Which takes us rather nicely to what's wackier than the conspiracy theory. And this is a doozy, Edwin.
Drum roll, Martin. You gotta have a drum roll. What's wackier than the conspiracy theory? Now, this is part two. Part two of the last one, and this is where the auction, that was not really an auction, but it's an auction, but it's a fake auction, and yeah, all that sort of stuff. This is it. This is the latest. So part one, you have to watch our show, our rant from last week. You only get part one. This is part two. So after the saga and the property being sold through a fake auction, so the agent. The agent says, calls the vendor and says, well, basically saying, well, I've got to issue you with an invoice of $900 now for the auctioneer. It's just, what? But it was a fake auction. Yeah, but at the end we had to call the auctioneer anyway and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, it's $900. Yes. Are you insane? I mean, this is but it's interesting to me. It's really the whole dynamics and how agents and selling agents really manipulate their clients. Yep. Not only to take them on board with a very high expectation, and in a matter of 3 to 4 weeks, basically drum it into their head that by the way, that expectation of X amount of million dollars has now been cut short by about 12% because I really gave you BS on the expectation. But yeah, we got them. Yeah, and the interesting thing is in the talk is what they say is you've got to meet the market. You know, it's this hobby. You've got to meet the market. Well, what happened to the market 3 weeks ago when you were telling me you could get me 10, 12, 15% more, and now you're going to hit me up for an auctioneer. So I basically said to him, well, you know what? Maybe you should just send them a fake payment.
Absolutely. Well, fake auction, fake payment, it seems to align quite well. But it underscores that people need to be quite careful here, because you can easily end up being bounced into situations that are not actually in your own interests. And I was talking to a couple of agents down here locally who have recently switched from one sort of home to another home, right? And they're trying to corral all of their clients and all of those properties that were sort of on the way in to be listed later, to sort of move them from one to the other, right? So there's no loyalty between them, no loyalty at all. It's all in their own interests.
Of course it is. And this is a lot of people that just don't get. They really don't get, and this is where people should we'll talk about a little bit more on the tips as well to what they can do. But this is where now vendors, because I'm sure we've got a lot of vendors as well that watch our show. You've got to be diligent with how you approach who you get to work for you, and how you scrutinize what they do and how they do it. Yeah. Because look, shenanigans just won't get you to the price point that you want to achieve. Work will get you to the price point that you want to achieve. This BS 15, 20, half an hour open house inspections on a weekend aren't going to get you to the price, or as close as possible to that price expectation that you may have had 2, 3, 4 weeks ago. A quick auction campaign or these BS campaigns that they're promoting now, sale by tender, and all these shenanigans. It's really just to manipulate not only the buyer but you, the vendor, to corral you to accept the lower price. That lower prices, because at the end of the day, they're not really working for you. And when you divide the amount of hours a selling agent works on a property, like a lawyer, if you look at it like a lawyer works on a case, if you look at it, how much time they spend on your property, open for inspections, preparing the home for sale, and all that. I did a summary of that in the video of that years ago, and it worked out that on average it was about 17 hours from start to finish these are the averages and across the board. But yet the average commission per hour, or the fee per hour that people were paying a few years back when I did this, was close to $1,452 or $57 per hour. That's how much you're paying the agent, and what are they doing for it? What are you paying them for to do? But sometimes I sort of think vendors are paying the agents to basically slap them silly and really beat the crap out of them to accept the lower price.
Absolutely. Let me just make this point. There are some good agents around. There are some agents who do the right thing, are squeaky clean, and actually can get a good deal done. The difficulty is you've got to try and separate the sheep from the goats. That's the complicated part, because there are also some that will sell their grandmother quite happily to get a deal. And I don't know any way, Edwin, short of asking lots of questions and long interactions, to work out whether you've got a good one or whether you've got one of the ones that will steal a grandmother. That's the problem.
Well, I think what you meant to say was you've got to separate the sheep from the wolves.
Fair enough. Sheep and wolves, that's probably right. But, it is tricky, isn't it? It really is tricky.
Oh, look, it is. It is. I get called in from time to time to help. I don't have a sales office anymore, as you know. But I get called in because of my relationship with a lot of our clients, and I get called in to help people to assist them with the sale. And my job in that process is to interview the local agents, see who's going to be basically give my client, because that's what they're contracting me for, to act for them on their behalf in interviewing the clients, because I've got an understanding of the industry, and I've got an understanding of what they can, what they are capable of doing, and what the fee, more importantly also what the fees are and why they're charging certain things. So and that's something that unless you know, like you say, Martin, it's very difficult. And the only other way is to really, you're going to be testing the agent, which a lot of vendors do, is they basically attend the open homes from the local agents that they're having and see how they behave and see how genuine the conversations are, and whether they, how they basically come across on the day. And then of course, then there's that gut feeling as well.
Well, I often say to people, if you're thinking of, employing an agent, see how they're like. Go and look at their other ones, the open homes in the area. You'll learn a lot very quickly. You can tell within 5 minutes, I think, if you go into an open home. That will tell you probably more about the status of the agent and how he's or she is thinking than almost anything else. And people are surprised. Oh, you mean we can do that? Of course. Do your own due diligence.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to talk about, a couple of the articles, right? So this is the one that, really is worth talking about, right? Talk about vested interests, right? So the Greens are now calling to pause interest rates until after the budget. And they're also talking about freezing electricity prices. They're freezing everything, really. I wonder why, Edwin. I wonder why.
Well, look, I've come to the conclusion that the property market unites everybody. It's that elixir of life, of peace and tranquility. It gives you that sense of hippiness, is all I can call it. It's united everybody, united all the parties. They all come together as one.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's a miracle.
Yes, it really is a miracle. The Messiah has come. Look, we talk about vested interests. Seriously, hands up, hands up. We should really go to the Parliament House and ask the one question that the Speaker of the House should ask. One thing, hands up those that that don't have an investment property, and if one or two put their hand up, they should be kicked out of Parliament House because they're not in unity.
Absolutely, the majority is to have many properties, right? So you've got to ask the obvious question. If you are sitting on a portfolio of investment properties and you are in the Parliament and you're being asked to make judgments about what to do and what not to do, can you honestly, hand on heart, say that you are not directly or indirectly influenced by the fact that your own personal finances are going to be impacted, right?
Of course.
That's the key question. And it's pretty obvious the answer, isn't it?
That's great. And that's what I put up on Twitter. You know, can we have a freeze on council rates, electricity and water bills, take politicians' wages back to pandemic levels, and stop travel payments? Oh, and not allow politicians to buy any more brown paper bags. Not until we have a full disclosure of the property portfolio.
Exactly. And, you know, there is a bit of disclosure, but it's a bit sort of flaky around the edges. The Guardian article I mentioned earlier on makes mention of. But the fact is that we know that many politicians have quite big portfolios and, therefore, they have vested interests. And interestingly, they can disclose them but still keep them. Now, interesting, if you have share portfolios, you have to get rid of them, right? So why have they still got properties is my question. Why have they got properties when they're in Parliament?
Yeah, but then again, look, it all comes back to all the other shenanigans. Then you've got to start talking about trusts, property trusts or companies and properties owned underneath trusts and the like. And it's a mess.
Look, blind trusts. There we go. That's already been done. It's already been done. That's crazy. Vested interest.
Look, it is. Yeah. It is. But look, at least we can. Yeah, we can be very positive today, Martin. We can say that the political parties are united.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, there we go. The miracle of property. It brings everybody together.
That's right.
Now, let's talk about Tom Pannis because, of course, Mr. Pannis is, he's bullish. Is he bullish or bear? I'm not sure where he is at the moment.
Don't know, but I just thought we'd start the Tom Pannis property index as well. Yeah, so a few weeks ago, he was calling the bottom of the market. We're back, baby, we're back. Something along those lines. Then the following week, it was it was a bit frosty, with four out of 11 sold this weekend. A little bit solemn still, 3 out of 6 sold. You could say it was a 50% clearance rate. But look, at the end of the day, Martin, this is what it comes back to. It comes back to the confidence in the market, right? It comes back to what, people could say all sorts of things. I mean, look, Dusty likes wet food and Evan loves, dry food. Dusty likes egg yolk when I have hard-boiled eggs and Evan doesn't. So does that mean that 50% of cats like egg yolks and 50% don't? It's all statistics and numbers, right? So what I put out there on the tweet was, let's not focus on clearance rate numbers, tweeters. Look at the low sales via auction or, compared to the open for inspections. If we're really going to look at numbers, I meant to say before, let's not focus on the averages, but let's look at the broader picture, which is the numbers. And in that screenshot, in that tweet that I put out there, with regards to the Tom Pannis index, it can be all over the place because it's a very, very short sample. In that, when you open up that tweet, you'll see that on the weekend, on Saturday, there were still 571 properties registered to go under the hammer in New South Wales, right? This is the website that I get this data from, and it was 571 were still registered on the Saturday, on the day. Underneath that, you can't see the five, but it's 571 in New South Wales. But underneath that, look at the open for inspection numbers. There was 22,450 open for inspections on the day, of which Tarek's put out that 38% of listed auctions sold over the weekend. So do the math. Not a hell of a lot of properties that are being sold. So what does that tell you? There's very low confidence from a buyer's point of view. They're very, very cautious in buying. There's very low confidence from a seller's point of view to achieving the price points. So what we're going through this stage, this period, when you look at the bigger and the broader picture, as we say, numbers don't lie. Percentages and auction clearance rates do. Yeah, and this is where people have got to, our friends and followers that are looking at buying. Yeah, as I say on my Twitter posts before the weekend, stay frosty and be Tyson. Yeah, duck and weave. Don't let the auctioneer and don't let the selling agents dictate what they want you to pay to obtain the property. You are in control right now. It is a buyer's market. So that's what I just wanted to put out on there with regards to the Tom Panos Index. You a short sample, and it's that short sample seems to sway his emotions from one end of the spectrum to another. And again, one auction sale, one property sale, high sale, low sale, one indicator does not make the market.
No, absolutely. One swallow doesn't make a summer, as I sometimes say, right? So there's lots of different factors to think about. But the overall trends is what you've got to look at, right? And we know a few things. We know that, well, listings are relatively high, although, as we highlighted, they didn't rise recently. We know that property prices are falling. We know that less are being listed for auction, more are being listed for private sale. We also know that in some cases, vendors who have to sell are having to come down 10 or 15% to be able to meet the market. And that's now true, not just in and around Sydney and Melbourne, but it's spilling out more broadly. And we also know that ahead, as we come into the spring selling season, we're going to see more property investors worrying about whether they should sell before prices fall further. And we also know that banks are beginning to put more pressure on some borrowers who have got difficulty with their mortgages to sell now before prices fall. That, in a nutshell, is the context. Plus, of course, rising interest rates. When rates go up, credit availability tightens. The margin above the current interest rate is 3%, which means that effectively your ability to borrow is reduced as rates rise. That means that people can't get as big of mortgages. That means that credit is tightened. That puts prices down. There you go. In a nutshell, that's what's going on.
Yeah, and a lot of people can say we're nutty. I would just like to give it all out.
Well, I don't know, nutty. I mean, I'm just watching what's going on and, drawing all the threads together. And by the way, I'm going to make a post tomorrow about those all those spare properties that are around, the million-plus spare properties, because there's some interesting analysis that's been done as to what's the cause. But I won't steal that thunder now. I'll just say it's coming tomorrow, folks. So watch out for that.
Yeah, it'd be good. And look, it leads us to the tip of the week, and it just look. Everybody loves an auction. We all love auctions. We've been watching all sorts of auctions, and I guess the Australian pastime, is the auction clearance rates and going to your local auction, I guess, on a Saturday. But now you can conduct your own auction, folks, and this is what we call the reverse auction. And this is where we basically get the agents to bid down on the commission fee, and also more importantly on the marketing fee that they want to charge you in order to present your property to market. Now, here's a couple of pointers. We're in a period of time where the agents will tell you, number one, they'll tell you that you need to spend a lot more in marketing in order for your property to be seen online. So they're going to get you to splash a lot more. So the $5,000 fees that they would charge in the good market, now they're going to say you basically got to spend $10,000. You got to double your marketing fee in order to expose your property to a broader audience, a broader community, for them to be able to do more with your property. Be careful with that, because it's the same bloody campaign, in the up season, low season, everything. It's the it's the same price across the internet, and what they do is really no different. It's just the spin that they put on the pressure that you're under as a seller, and then you start believing, because their sales strategy, because they know that the commissions are harder to get by now, and as you and I've been talking about, Martin, it's not necessarily the first agent that sells the home in a slow market. It's the second agent, and in some cases, you could go into the third agent doing the sale. So, in order for these agents to get a drink along the way, they will up the ante on the marketing fee, which costs you upfront, which more than 50% of that goes into their pocket anyway, right? So that's the first thing that you got to be careful on. So you got to get them to reduce that. The second one is the commission. The commission, again, they'll tell you the story. It's a hard market. In order for us to do things and for our office to do more and to do this and to do that, we got to charge you more on commission. The average commission currently is 1.65 across Sydney. That's the average commission. But when you look at it from a percentage across to the average price of a home being 1.4 million, do the math. So that's the average, and then work out how much that is. But they'll say to you that we're going to charge you more by way of commission because our office has to do a lot more. Well, you should have been doing that anyway. That's what I'm paying you to do anyway. You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, the average hours that an agent spends on a home on an average market is 15 to 17 hours, right? So yes, they may be spending 5, 7, 10 hours more, but realistic. But when they're charging you $1,456 or something dollars per hour, maybe they can afford to spend a little bit more time. You know, I don't think it'll hurt them to cut their fee down to to sort of spend double the amount of time, because barristers, I know a hell of a lot of good barristers. And the junior barristers are charging $650 an hour. You're actually giving a real estate agent, $1,450 an hour. And these are the things that agents will do. So start having your reverse auction. But basically, say, look, I'm going to be transparent with you when you get the next agent in. I'm going to be transparent with you. LJ Hooker wants to charge me this, and that. What will you charge me? And what are you going to do for me? And what are you going to throw in? So, and that's how you start having your reverse auction. In other words, you're turning the table on, and you can, and most of all, just have fun doing it and just watch them squirm.
No, great advice, Edwin. And I think if you couple that, as I say, go and visit what they're currently trying to sell on open days and see how they perform actually, in a context as well. Put those two things together, and you're onto a winner in terms of picking the right agent at the right price point.
Look, it is, and look, it's at the right price point, right? It's not necessarily the cheapest, but it's also getting them to what are they going to do. So, are you willing to do a 1 hour open house? I'm going to give you the house for as long as you want. Are you going to do 1 half hour open house in the week? Are you going to do 2 half hour open houses in the week? And are you going to have your open house between 10 and 12, so that you can go to the beach after that, or you can go on, whatever you need to do on Saturday after that? This is what I don't get. Most agents have their open houses between 10 and 12. When I was doing sales, most of my open houses were later in the afternoon, when everybody went and took the went through all the mess of going through all the other open homes and trying to get there and ran frantically. Then they had to pick up the kids from sport, and then they had to have lunch and everything else. So basically, and not only that, Martin, but our open homes were, on average an hour in order for people to spend the adequate time to feel comfortable and do all the due diligence, as much as due diligence as they required. But these days, it's all about, quick. And then take your money and run. So this is your opportunity to have a go at the auctions and reverse auction and crunch the agent.
Absolutely. I'll just add one thing. The other thing I always do is insist that they give you a debrief after each open home, right? Because quite often you hear nothing.
Especially when they feel it's it, 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 the news isn't good.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really important to get that consistent feedback. And so one of the things I always say if I'm involved is, okay, at the end of each open home, just send me an email or give me a phone call. Tell me what happened, you know, what was going on, what are the key messages? So because that keeps you in the loop then, and you don't just then throw it all over the fence and say, well, they're looking after it, I don't need to worry. No, it's really important that you do, because what you want to know early is what the indications actually are as well. That's something else which I think is quite important.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, and that's it. And then just gather as much intel, right, from as you do from when you're buying to when you're going to sell this summary intel, because at the end of the day, it's going to be an individual, a professional that's going to be working for you. And you're going to be paying them a fee. And these days, as I said before, and as I've been saying for a long time, selling agents have taken more interest, a keener interest in the commission that they're getting up front by way of the marketing fee than they do by the results at the end. Because at the end of the day, getting an extra 50, 60, 100,000 for your property by working a little bit harder doesn't mean a hill of beans from them when the average commission is 1.7. That just represents $1,700 more in their pocket, which they're quite happy to do without, because you've already paid them a hefty sum along the way and you've given them a good commission at the end. So you've got to make sure that they're working for you, not against you.
Yeah, great advice, Edwin. Well, thank you very much. And I think a good way to finish the show again tonight, just to underscore to everybody that you can do things on the way through. You can keep control. And, you know, if you do that, then effectively you're going to end up with a much better outcome. But you probably will have a less happy agent.
They don't like to be micromanaged, do they?
They certainly don't. But on the other hand, as you say, they are providing a professional service. And to that end, it's appropriate that you actually manage them appropriately. Edwin, thanks very much. Appreciate that. We'll do it all again next week, I guess.
We definitely will, Martin. Let's see what comes our way that we can talk about in all our different segments.
See you later. Take care.